Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Benefits and Insurance Professionals.
And we're going to talk everything long-term care today. We're joined by Steve Kane, National Sales Leader at Long-Term Care Partners, LTCI Partners, and a member of NABIP's Long-Term Care Working Group. Hey, Steve, how are you today?
Good, David. How you doing?
I am awesome, thank you. Awesomer now that we're talking. So let's kick it off and let's start with kind of the big picture. How would you describe the current state of long-term care insurance market, both for individuals and for employers?
I would say it's resurgent, right? That's a good word for it. You know, it's really coming back. I'm just excited about both segments of the market. And that's not just the optimism of a sales guy that's wired into me. This is based on data, right? Based on sales growth in the marketplace. So let's start with the individual segment of the market. You know, there's nothing more constant in life than change. And individual long-term care over the last 10 years has seen significant change, right? The number of players in the space and the types of products that are being distributed out there. And I would say the dominant products that are being distributed out there today are hybrid or combination life and long-term care plans. It seems like not only the manufacturers, but the distributors of this coverage and the consumers prefer the dual purpose policies versus the traditional. That's not to say, though, that we haven't seen growth from a few carriers in the traditional long-term care marketplace. In fact, I'm not at liberty to share because I've signed NDAs, but we expect a few more carriers to come into the individual market in 2026, which is a nice surprise. So I think, you know, we've seen this generational shift or this demographic shift that's taking place. And a lot of Gen Xers like me, I'm 51, are going through it with mom and dad right now or have seen loved ones go through it. And so that makes them do the planning. Once they feel a little bit of pain, and I think that's what it takes, they do a little bit of planning. And so we're seeing more and more people interested in having these long-term care conversations. And frankly, it's not going to change. On the group side of the equation, really same story, a shift from traditional and multi-life long-term care insurance into combination life and long-term care at the worksite. Primarily, these are done with worksite life plus long-term care products. So you had a voluntary life product. And then over the years, more and more carriers came in and said, hey, let's add on a chronic illness or a long-term care rider. And now you're seeing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars of that stuff sold annually. And so guarantee issue coverage, full portability, and the underlying structure of the products are usually term or whole life or universal life. And again, broadly appeals to a younger demographic. You know, if I'm not even thinking about long-term care, I've got some life insurance that I could buy on a guarantee issue basis that's portable. And if I'm an older employee, you know, I'm starting to think about long-term care planning, and here I could secure it without underwriting as opposed to being underwritten in the individual market. So a lot of carriers coming in as we speak, and it is a crowded market. And you know, now what we're finding is there's kind of one little hole in the market, and that's the small to mid-market. And we're seeing more carriers try to find solutions for them that are profitable, you know, distributors that want to play there in the small to mid-market, the under 500 life market.
Is there more confidence now in the pricing? I know when long-term care insurance first became a thing, there were loads of carriers in. They didn't really understand how to price the risk. Some of them were pricing off of life tables. Some of them were pricing off of DI tables. Neither one was really accurate for a variety of reasons. Has that settled down?
It has. And I think those who are in the traditional long-term care market today have learned from their own mistakes and learned from others' mistakes. You know, what plagued the industry were lapse assumption rates. They thought that people were going to lapse the products at a much higher rate. Certainly the experience, the mortality and morbidity experience plagues these carriers and has given them trouble. And then record low interest rates for a long time really hurt the carriers as well. So you stir all that up and that led to the pain. But I'll tell you what, today's products are priced with much more conservative actuarial assumptions. They build mistakes in for adverse selection. You know, they have, you know, lapse rates at 1% you know, built into these products. And so whatever carriers are writing today, it's profitable for them. You know, they come to us as distributors saying, please write more. We want to grow. And so it's our job, you know, to reach out to membership and say, hey, this is still a viable product line. Hey, there are still carriers that play in this space, because I think there's an assumption out there, David, that there's nobody left.
Well, it was, I mean, it was tough sledding for a little while, but I'm glad that it's gotten, you know, back to some level of equanimity, for lack of a better word. So as long as we're in the back, way back machine for a minute, when we did our prep for our call, you mentioned that back in 2023, there was some slow starts due to economic uncertainty. What were you seeing that caused that?
I just think, like, with these products and this year in particular, we've seen it in our individual business where when there's market volatility, financial advisors who distribute a lot of this stuff are apprehensive about having long-term care conversations with their clients. You know, if you know, tariffs are impacting the market a certain week, or the threat of tariffs are impacting the market a certain week, an advisor is usually telling the client, hey, I'm going to give you a hug. Our strategy is sound. We could talk about asset allocation. We've got to look at this long term. But the last thing they're doing is saying, you know what, David, we need to talk about long-term care planning. So I think the clients perceive this product as a discretionary spend in a down economy or a fragile economy. And so it takes either a specialist, somebody that's got passion, you know, for this product line, or an advisor, a financial advisor that's looking at things holistically to continue to have these conversations, even when we go through the ups and downs.
You know, it's you mentioned on the individual side that you think demographics is driving a whole bunch of it. And I think you're right. I human beings are strange animals. We don't ever see the light until we feel the heat, and then we try to move on stuff. But there's also been a resurgence in worksite long-term care marketing. What's driving that?
I think it starts with, I'd love to say because we're doing a great job marketing and educating the world about long-term care planning, but realistically, it started with state-mandated programs. You know, if I look back, you know, the real growth came with the Washington Cares Fund. And we've covered this in different podcasts and emails with a lot of our membership. And essentially, the state of Washington created the first of its kind public long-term care program where residents of the state, if they don't own private long-term care insurance prior to November of 21, pay a tax. Essentially, they're paying a tax into a public program that provides them a nominal long-term care benefit of $36,500. It's indexed with inflation, but essentially I'm paying a tax and I get a little bit of long-term care, a little bit of a head start to whatever long-term care event that I have. And that hopefully will reduce Medicaid expenditures in the state of Washington and help a lot of residents. But other states are exploring this issue. I live in California, David. We've got four times the amount of working age adults as does Washington. We have the same issues, but greater. So what are we doing to address this issue of long-term care planning? Well, the state did 2 years of studies. You know, they put together a task force. They put together an actuarial report. Now, no action has been taken since then. But I'll tell you what, the idea of California putting together a public program created tremendous groundswell, created tremendous interest, not only from brokers, but employers. Now, multiply that around the country with New York and Pennsylvania and Massachusetts that are exploring these programs. And that creates a situation where it's now on HR and benefits radar screen. They're saying, hey, I might want to offer this to my employees as a way to provide them with an alternative to a tax. And so I would love to say that it's because of our incredible marketing. No, you know, it's because I'd rather secure some insurance than pay a tax.
Understand. I think most people would. So, but there is a commonly held belief that after Unum left the space, there aren't a whole lot of worksite solutions available. How accurate is that perception today? I know we were talking about the individual market and carriers coming back and some new, as yet to be named, carriers coming on.
Yeah.
What's that looking like in the worksite space?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited. And that was it, man. You nailed it. When Unum got out, everybody thought, that's it. There is no more group long-term care. And to an extent, they were correct in that there was no true group traditional long-term care anymore. However, we saw carriers adapt, evolve, and come out with multi-life long-term care insurance, where these were individual contracts, just like multi-life disability. And they provided simplified issue underwriting. And then a few of the carriers stayed in and some got out. And what that's evolved to is the worksite life plus long-term care. And then over the last 3 or 4 months, I've had numerous conversations with carriers that are going to be entering the market. And these are traditional multi-life carriers in 2026. So like I said, there's a resurgence in the market. These carriers have figured out, hey, we know how to price it now. We know there's going to be this demographic shift, you know, that's going to draw client interest. And we know that states aren't going to quit. You know, states have to figure out a way to balance their budgets and protect themselves from, you know, the costs of long-term care. And so there's going to be more conversations about legislative activity, which will drive sales. And so I expect at a minimum 3 carriers in 2026 to enter the worksite long-term care market with traditional products. Their focus is going to be under 1,000 lives, which kind of fits for us in our practice because we're looking at the large group worksite life plus long-term care carriers, 1,000 plus eligibles. But downstream, David, that's where the opportunity's at. You know, that's where our membership focuses. We needed a solution for a 50 life group, a 100 life group, a 200 life group or less. And I think that's what we're going to have.
Are you seeing any huge shifts or any huge shifts on the horizon in plan design?
I would say yes. On the worksite life side, we are pushing as a business and as an industry for some form of inflation protection, you know, so that the policy benefits grow in value over time. And we've seen a couple carriers implement those riders or options into their new products. So I think that's a piece of it. We're also seeing carriers on the worksite life plus long-term care side provide more monthly benefit availability. So it used to just be a standard. You pick a death benefit. Let's say easy math. You pick $100,000 death benefit for coverage, and you would get 4% a month. Well, now carriers are filing their products to go up higher, so maybe 6% a month, so I get a higher monthly benefit. I've seen that. On the individual worksite life plus long-term care side, no, I don't know that I'm seeing like unbelievable, unique product features. I know we've talked to one that maybe is thinking about including a term life rider along with it so they can answer that, hey, what if I don't use this question? But I don't know that there's unbelievable innovation when it comes to it. I think, you know, the designs work, maybe just work too well for the consumer back in the day.
Well, and, you know, maybe a little bit of term life wouldn't hurt the pricing assumptions because, you know, term has always been profitable for the carriers. And so, you know, yeah. You know, why not? Maybe it just gives them a little bit, it gives the underwriters a little bit more comfort level. But I know on the individual side in DI, there've been cost of living adjustments for like ever.
Yeah.
Is it all that different on the long-term care market?
I don't think so. It's just, you know, you're looking at these worksite life plus long-term care companies, some of the larger ones that may have been in the group long-term care business back in the day and are very apprehensive. You know, they've got a lot of baggage and pain. And so when it comes to developing new products with growth options, it concerns them. You know, they look back to the pain that they felt back in the day. And somebody's got to convince a board member to say, yes, let's do this. Let's invest in this. And so I think slowly but surely we're coming there because, again, look at me, a 51-year-old as an example. If I bought today a worksite life plus long-term care plan that did not include inflation, my benefits don't grow. So 30 years from now when I need benefits, you know, I'm at a fraction of what it costs. That's okay. Don't get me wrong. Something is better than nothing. But it sure would be nice to have a 1, 2, 3% inflation option.
Sure, sure, absolutely. You talked a little bit about Washington State's public LTC program, and I know you said other states are coming on, although it seems like it's taken a while. I know Massachusetts is there and whatnot. If more states start to implement public LTC programs, how do you think that would affect private LTC sales and client conversations?
Yeah, so I'm a contrarian on this. Sometimes I talk to my peers in the industry, and they don't like it. And I love it. You know, I think what this does is it legitimizes the conversation of long-term care planning. David, the state thinks this is really important. Or the federal government with the WISH Act that we saw Tom Suozzi, congressman from New York, propose earlier this year. And so we're working on ways to partner with public programs as a private industry. And NABIP is front and center in these conversations. We are meeting with legislators, this long-term care working group. We're having conversations with lobbyists to make sure that we've got a seat at the table and we're not on the menu when it comes to these conversations. So I love the fact, I don't think that we can handle it on our own, the private industry. We would be in a much different spot if everybody said, yep, private's the way to go, that's the only way to go. So I think a combination where you get a lot of eyeballs on a public program, and then you complement whatever that program looks like with private coverage. But you need the public program to help promote, and you need the private coverage not to beat up one to sell the other.
Yeah, it will definitely drive awareness. Now, you know, we've been talking about smaller cases, and I know you've got a game-changing case kind of coming on the books. How do big wins like that affect agencies and agents planning and forecasting for the rest of the year? And how many of them are out there? I mean, are there opportunities for mere mortal agents to go after those?
You know, I would say, like, you got to have a strong stomach. Like, the gestation period of a large or a jumbo type of group could be years. In fact, the one that we're enrolling right now that has over 100,000 eligibles took us 3+ years to get from conversation one to enrollment today. And so would I tell people to go be elephant hunters? No way. You know, I'd rather have them focus on existing clients that they're working with today, you know, or a mid-market group as opposed to the large market group. There's a handful of firms that focus on jumbo or large market opportunities, and they're kind of embedded with national employee benefit consulting firms, and that's who brings them into these opportunities. So I'd say stay under 1,000 lives, and it's blue ocean.
That's wild. That's wild. What, you know, we've talked about, and you just mentioned it parenthetically, that selling LTC requires patience and a little bit of a longer-term perspective. When you teach agents and brokers how to market this stuff, is it a risk conversation? Is it an exposure conversation? You know, what's kind of the track that you teach?
Yeah, I've been wrestling with this lately. Thank you for asking this. There's a couple new software tools on the individual side of the house that using AI specifically tell you what your potential long-term care exposure may be, right? Really, really cool tools that can, you answer a 3-minute survey and it's telling you, you know, here's what we think the type of care you're going to need based on what you've shared and how much it's going to cost, right? And then you, on the other side of it, you know, you think that, like, hey, we have 3 pounds of jelly in our head, right? And we act irrationally. That side with the tools are very rational, but most decisions that we make are emotional, and the data just supports our emotion, right? So I've been wrestling with it. I think you got to do it both ways is the answer. You're going to have within a group some folks that are the engineering types, the analyticals, the folks that don't have personal experience with long-term care, and they want to look at, I've identified a risk, you know, here's the different ways to assess the risk, and then I'm going to mitigate the risk, right? And then you have the other side that said, hey, I was dealing with my mom at the assisted living facility, and that stinks, and it's hard. And I know that I've got to drop stuff. Last week I had to drop personally, had to reschedule a call with a large employer because I had to run to mom's assisted living facility and deal with the care over there and what was going on. And so, you know, you could have that conversation during an enrollment, which I think is effective, and then you can have the other one too. So I think as far as the series of communication that you go out educating folks about long-term care planning, I think you got to touch on both. And you and I might be different in terms of how do we handle risk? How do we assess different risks in our lives? What do we want to do? Some might want to hedge against it. Some might want to totally transfer the risk. Some might be interested in the financial conversation, and some might want to tug at heartstrings, you know, with how tough this stuff is emotionally.
So at least at the present, no matter how much the AI is out there helping us, we still need the other AI, which is adult intelligence.
Definitely. You know, we need the EQ. you know, I think about our individual business, and I think about the most successful advisors that do businesses with. We're a brokerage, and the most successful advisors certainly have all the tools in their financial planning software or this new AI that I was sharing with you, but really, they're going to their clients and saying, you need to do this. I think this is really important. I've seen other clients go through these scenarios unprepared, and here were the consequences. David, you need to do something. And so that we've seen to be the most successful on the individual side. On the worksite side, I think tying it to retirement readiness and financial wellness is important. Most employers now are thinking about, or they have some type of program, and long-term care planning, I think, augments that program or runs beside that program. And all you need to do, I'm one of these nerds that reads all the data and information from plan sponsors and 401ks. The biggest threat that we all face in our retirement is healthcare costs. And if I'm to say, what's the biggest healthcare cost in retirement? It's long-term care. And so I've got a pretty compelling message there too.
And to your earlier point, both of those are emotional triggers. We talk to our marketing clients about that all the time. If you're fashioning a marketing message, you've got to understand the psychology behind it, because you've got to trigger the amygdala. We just rationalize stuff with our prefrontal cortex these days. We've gotten really good at it, but yeah. Logic never bought a sports car.
That's right.
So, you know, it's all emotion. As we wrap up, what do you see the next 5 years looking like in the long-term care area?
Yeah, I'll start with like macro, with legislative activity. I think you're going to see more states explore long-term care. I do think you'll see another one come out with a state program, like a statewide program. I think you're going to see a number of states, even red states, explore long-term care, because aging is a bipartisan issue. I think you're going to see the WISH Act continue to be talked about. I don't see it being enacted. I don't see it being voted on, but I think you're going to see continued momentum around maybe a federal program too, because there's enough champions in there that want to continue this conversation. I do think you're going to see additional players in the under 1,000 life marketplace, maybe an additional player or two in the worksite life plus long-term care. And David, this is going to be part of our everyday language. I think our membership at NABIP is going to have to put this in their holster, you know, in their bag of tricks, whatever you want to call it, because I think clients are going to demand it. I think clients, not demand like, I need to buy this coverage, but I mean, if you're not having conversations about protecting retirement income and long-term care, then they're going to have it with somebody else. So I think our NABIP membership is going to have to learn a little bit more about this planning. They're going to have to either give it a look, number one, or give it a second look. You know, if they saw it in the past with Unum or somebody else on the individual side, you're going to have to give it a second look, because math has no emotion. I know we're talking about, you know, the disconnect between our emotions and logic, but the math tells me, given our demographic shift, that this is going to have to come up in benefits conversations.
Well, and it could also be a very lucrative addition to some maybe other parts of their business where commissions have been going down and being squeezed.
That's right. And you know, it really depends. Like, most of the individual stuff is like heaped compensation, where you're in the 60, 70, 80% range of first year premium. So it's a nice way to augment your income too.
Great conversation. Steve Kane, National Sales Leader at LTCI Partners and a member of NABIB's Long-Term Care Working Group. Steve, thanks for sharing your expertise with us.
Thanks, David.
You can have the Healthcare Happy Hour podcast downloaded automatically by subscribing on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also find a link to the podcast in the member-exclusive Washington Update, published on Fridays. For more information on our government affairs efforts or to become a member, visit nabip.org.
Awesome.